Next step, number 696, October 7, 2021.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. We reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here, and if you're a regular listener, welcome back. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Now, I know somebody is going to ask, why are you starting at this point? And I got to be honest with you, I was not planning on starting with this story. I mean, in a week where you've got your Catholicos meeting with His Holiness Pope Francis, or you've got our Catholicos meeting with His Holiness Bartholomew, the Ecumenic Patriarch. I mean, there's some stories that need to be told, but I'm going to start off with this story, and I think you'll figure out how these all connect, because it's a secular story, very secular, but it does connect with something even greater, and I think it's from our Dust in the Wind department, okay? And appropriately, we're going to talk about a department store to start off everything. Just today, it was announced that the last Sears department store in Illinois is on the way of closing down. And nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky. Is that right? Sears. I mean, those of you who are outside of the United States may not get it. And this, I don't know. You may get it. I don't know how prevalent Sears is throughout the world. But here in America, Sears was the premier location to just... It was the department store of department stores for the common man, for the common person. Yeah, we had some really nice hoity-toity places that you could go. But Sears was basically the department store that had everything. And for them to be closing their last one in Illinois, of all places, you know, in Illinois, they had the Sears Tower. Now it's called Willis Tower, but many people still refer to it as the Sears Tower. It used to be the largest, the tallest building in the world, 108 stories, right in Chicago. And, you know, this is like Chicago, Illinois, and they're closing down the last Sears in Illinois. I remember as a kid, it was the place to go. You'd go with your parents. That's where you bought tools from. That's where appliances came from. Yes, that's where appliances. You'd walk in and there'd be the smell of popcorn. They'd sell popcorn. Me and my buddies, we'd go there you could walk there. And we'd find records. We used to find 45 records. Beatles. I remember specifically getting the Beatles' Baby, You're a Rich Man. And what was on the other? Was it Lady Madonna, I think, on the other side? It was, yeah, they had these 45 records, which were always one hit on one side, and then the other side was usually referred to as a B-side. But in the case of the Beatles, you know, both sides were both hits. You know, it's just like wild. And we used to go to Sears and pick them up. Later on in life, as you know, it's your custom. This is where you bought. Dad bought his tools from there. This is where you buy your tools from. This is where you buy appliances from. But nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky. And all of a sudden you see that, you know, there's other people who are competing. There's the Walmarts and the Targets and, of course, the big giant Amazon. Got to a point where Sears could not compete. And Sears, you know, originally was a mail order company. We used to get these giant Sears catalogs. I mean, this was an institution within the United States. I'd love to hear from some of you outside of the United States to hear if Sears had a standing in your country. I know here in America, it was part of Americana. Sears Roebuck Company. I remember the Sears, and in fact, when I was in Hollywood a few weeks ago, I passed by the old Sears building. It's kind of interesting because there's no windows on it. It's a huge building. I'd say maybe about four stories. We used to go there as kids, and it's the department store that had everything, but there's no windows in it. And it kind of like hit me that, you know, is this like part of Sears, decor, you know, no windows, no light. You know, it's like the casinos, right? They don't put windows in so you don't know if it's day or night and you just gamble all night. Well, that's what Sears was. I don't know about gambling all night, but definitely it was a place where you can go and get just about everything. And now the biggest retailer in the country is finished. Yes, a secular story on the next step. Well, it sounds familiar, doesn't it? That nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky. And you look at all the things that come and go, all the things that we have. Everything, it says on the sign it's here, must go. I mean, isn't that telling? Yeah, everything must go. Is that true? What are the things that we keep? What are the things that must go? I think about that often when I think about the relevancy of our church in today's world. You look at something like Sears, and it should be telling you something. A few years ago, it was Kodak. I mean, if you remember Kodak film, you might not remember the name as a kid, but you definitely remembered the color. It was a bright yellow with the red letters on it, Kodak. And Kodak, in fact, I remember back in the 70s, and then in the 80s too, but I remember specifically in the 70s when I was a student and I was traveling, I had gone to Armenia and everything. Kodak was the generic name for cameras. Yeah, it was the generic. Just like you say Kleenex for, you know, facial tissue. Just like you say Scotch tape. For adhesive tape, you know, I won't give me some Scotch tape. These are brand names. Scotch tape is a brand name. Kleenex is a brand name. But it's also a generic name. You say, give me a Kleenex. I need a Kleenex, right? Everybody knows what that is. Kodak was a generic name for camera. Did you bring your Kodak? Do you have your Kodak? And I remember the first time this hit me because I had a Zenith, a 35mm Zenith when I went to Armenia, and they'd say, where's your Kodak? And I vaguely remember correcting people, no, I don't have a Kodak. And then you realize, no, Kodak is just a generic name. That's how popular, that's how synonymous it was with photography. Kodak. Do you have a Kodak? It's gone. It's gone. There is no more Kodak. Yeah, you see the name, and I understand now you can buy the name, as I understand people will probably buy the Sears name. There's some names that get bought, and then they put it on different products. But the main company is finished. It's over. Kodak is over. What lasts? And when you think about our church functioning in a world, Sears had a problem of competition. Look at the parallels. Walmart, Target. You go into Target, you kind of like enjoy shopping. You know, they've made it an enjoyable atmosphere. Quite different from the Sears atmosphere, right? Just everything's laid out there. You go into Walmart's, it's just got all kinds of stuff. And then, of course, Amazon. Amazon, true to its name, it's like bigger than life. It's Amazon. Just get everything. I mean, even the wildest things. The other day, a small lock broke on my door. Would you believe I went to the hardware store, could not find it, and then just poked it in on Amazon, and it came the next day. The specific lock. I mean, you can't get any more convenient. And that's the kind of world we're living in. Now, you think about your church, you think about your faith. We're talking about a 2,000-year-old church. And there are conditions in which it functions. And it has to be able to function within those conditions. Do you think that if Jesus was here right now, if he was here right now, if his ministry had started, let's say in the year 2019, I'm just picking that because it's pre-pandemic. It's not like, no, I'm going to say if his ministry had started in 2015, I think that the world severely changed in 2016. But 2015, let's say his ministry started in 2015, with all the conditions around, do you think that when he'd come and he'd talk to you in a city setting, he'd talk about a grain of wheat has to fall into the earth and die for it to produce its harvest? Or do you think he might be talking about the companies? A company must die, must give of itself, must find a means of giving of itself so that it can produce the revenues that it wants. In other words, Jesus would talk according to the times and according to the audiences that he had. The story of the Good Samaritan. Do you think if he came today, and he's talking to the people here in America, he would talk to them about a Samaritan? People look at him, what? Who's a Samaritan? What? What are you talking about? No, he would make it applicable to the time and to the conditions. Perhaps he'd talk about it in this way, that there was a man, a black man who was beaten by robbers. And the Asian man walked by and said, I feel I have compassion for you, and I can share with you some of the systems by which you can improve yourself. And the white man came by and said, you know, poor you, I have pity for you. I want to give you some kind of means by which you can pull yourself up. But perhaps it was the brown man who came by and looked at him and had compassion and took him to the hospital, gave his credit card and said, tend to him, tend to this man. And when I return, if there's anything left, I will take care of those bills as well. And then he would turn to us and say, which of these men was a neighbor to his brother? In other words, he would say that, you know, it's not about black, white, brown, yellow, red. It doesn't matter. You're people. That was the story of the Good Samaritan, right? Who is my neighbor? It's the person who does the will of God. It's the person who helps. It's the person who has compassion. Not the priest, not the Levite, but the Samaritan. Somebody who was from outside. And there it was. There's the brown man looking at the black man, while the white man, while the Asian, while the Native American, while everybody got involved, it was one person who said, I know what I need to do. I have compassion. I will take care of him. And you answer the question. And Jesus brought it down. That's what it was. And that's what made Christianity and makes Christianity a real religion. It talks beyond time. The story is timeless, whereas these stores, whether it's Kodak, with their film, I mean, Kodak's another phenomena, right? I mean, the world was going digital, and they said, film, you know, we got film. And it didn't work. It didn't work. Film was in the old days. Yes, there are people that will, and please don't write me. I know I like film too. But you can't compete. You can't compete with an iPhone sitting in your pocket, pulling it out whenever you want, and then having everything uploaded into the clouds. You're not going to go back to the old system of loading a camera with film, taking that film out, and being careful that you mess up a picture because, you know, there's no going back. Taking that film out, taking it to the store, or waiting a few days, having it developed, and then bringing it home and paying an exorbitant price for that developing and that convenience. No, the real convenience is in your pocket. And that's what the day is today. That's what today demands. And if you can't keep up, even if you are a giant like Kodak, you're over. You're finished. And the world demands that if I'm looking for a product, I need it, and I can get it. You can't be a Sears that says, hey, come in, and I've got these big appliances here, but I don't have any guarantee that it'll work. By the way, for me personally, I mean, in the last 10 years, I've made the complete switch over 2 times. One was with Windows, with the Sears, just the quality of it was bad. And here's the part about it. You can't go back to them. There's nobody. There's no service. There's no service. I say, okay, if it doesn't work, just toss it out and get something new. And the same was true with the refrigerator. You get to a point where I personally had said, that's enough with Sears. Yeah, I know it's iconic. It's something, but it doesn't serve my needs. And just think about it. There's a romance to our religion, to our faith, to the Armenian church that doesn't transcend to everybody. Yes, you may be involved in the church because romantically it's beautiful. It's like what the Archbishop said, you know, you're on this beautiful bridge and you look at it and you say, ah, this is the greatest, the Armenian church, it's so mystical, it's so beautiful. You look at it and you forget, wait a minute, it's a bridge. It's supposed to be connecting me with this life and the divine. And what's happened is we've celebrated the bridge without realizing its purpose. We celebrate the church a lot of times, forgetting that it has a purpose, the kingdom of God here on. If you're like me, I know that last year, exactly a year ago, we were completely upside down as a people, as a community, for me, as a Christian. That how could this go on, and what is our response? Specifically, I'm talking about we were in the middle of a war that started on September 27th of last year. And it lasted for 44 days, but a year ago today, we were right in the middle of it. And if you're like me, you're getting reminders on social media. Like, this is what happened a year ago. This is what you posted a year ago. This is what was important to you a year ago. And you're seeing all these pictures come out. Of course, it's more than just a social media event. It's a reality that has continued until today. Yesterday, I received a new book, which has just come out, and it is called Humanity During War. It is by Esras Telalian. He is a deacon of the Armenian Church, one which I had as a guest here on The Next Step several months ago. And he went to Armenia. He's incredibly talented as a photojournalist. Photographed events and activities, expressions, photographed faces, photographed glances of people during the war, and documented humanity during war. Now, this book, it just came out. I'm mentioning it here because I think that it's one of those books that you can't look at it online. Yeah, there are some pictures online. I'll put a link to his website on our show notes today. Please check it out, because not only can you see a preview of the book, but you can also order the book. And the reason I'm saying this, it's one of those books where I know digital media makes things so easy. In fact, several of my books, what I've done, books that are just easier for me to access, I've digitized, or I found digital copies and gotten rid of the hard copies because, you know, basically they're reference books. But in this case, you need to get this book. You need to have the physical book with you. And I'll tell you why. Because just about 2 months ago, I was talking with somebody who told me that they had received a wedding invitation via text. I said, what? What are you talking? No, yeah, that's what was being sent out. And I looked at it and I said, there it is. Yeah, it's a wedding invitation. So I guess we're at that point right now where, you know, we are in a digital world. To me, wedding invitations are one of those things. I mean, George Costanza notwithstanding, it's one of those things that you have to go out and you have to get a beautiful little invitation. Doesn't have to be expensive, but it should say that, you know, you are invited and it's a more personal thing that you send it out. It gets mailed and it is a physical invitation. Now it's digital. Now it's digital. I just found that out, okay? So when you look at this book, you realize there can't be a digital means by which you interact with this book. This is one of those books where the pictures, they come alive in your hands because they're just a few inches from you. It's not like a screen. It's not two-dimensional. And you cry. You weep over these pictures. You see the joy in their face and you rejoice. You look at hope in the midst of war, in the midst of an enemy. I mean, Armenia is stuck in this place where it just has the worst neighbors in the entire. Everyone around them wants a piece of Armenia, and you know that. In fact, look at the news today. Right now, Azerbaijan is shooting its airplanes over Armenian airspace, and just this bullying principle. You know, like, look who we are. We're coming. It's just the worst. They have the worst neighbors in the world. In the middle of that worst, you're seeing a glimmer of hope. You're seeing humanity. And that's what this book is about. Humanity During War by Ezra Stelalian. I'm going to put a link on today's show notes. I need you to press on it, order a copy. Once you do, once you get it, once you put it in your hand, it's the kind of book that you're going to say, you know what, I need to get some for my friends. You know what, I need to make this a gift that I give. Because it tells a story, but at the same time, it invites you. It invites you to engage with the Armenian people, with the Armenian drama, with the struggle. You know, William Gladstone, back in the 19th century, he was the British Prime Minister. He has a saying, which is often quoted, but you feel it when you read this. It says, to serve Armenia is to serve civilization. I mean, it's so profound. To serve Armenia is to serve civilization. British Prime Minister. And you feel it when you read this book. I need to take a break because it's getting emotional on this side of the microphone. And it's also probably about time for us to play the song of the day. I've picked out something that goes back a little bit, and there's a reason I picked this out. It's not so much for the title as much as what's being said inside of it. It was a popular song in religious circles, but it was popular in the pop. Enjoy.
Man.
put your hand in the hand of the man. Wow. That goes back a while. Sung by Ocean was, I don't know if this they were a one-hit wonder band, but Ocean sang that song. It was called Put Your Hand in the Hand, and if you go through, it talks about the man who stilled the water. Yes, he stilled it, made it into wine. Put your hand in the hand of the man who calmed the sea. But the reason I wanted to play it beyond that is the invitation to introspection, and I love it. You know, he says, every time that I read the holy book, I want to tremble when I think about the carpenter who cleared the temple. Okay, beautiful, right? We know that story. Yeah, those ugly people in there, and Jesus went and he cleared it out. But the line that I love is, for the buyers and sellers were no different fellows than what I profess to be. And that moment of introspection, I think, is so important, especially at a time that we're living in right now, because it's so easy to look at others and saying, yeah, Jesus was here, he'd clear the temple. He's clearing the temple with you. I mean, what are your issues? Where are your faults? Look at yourself first and foremost. And I needed to play that today, because I think that that invitation to introspection is something that we shouldn't pass up. There it is. It's an important one, especially where I'm coming from. I was involved in a meeting. We're talking about leadership and all the rules and regulations. And, you know, it occurred to me that as priests, we are called to be leaders of communities. And rules and regulations actually work against what we do, because the true leader is stifled by the rules and regulations because it prohibits their creativity. So somehow when in churches we get more and more rules and regulations, and you read anti-mysticism, okay? We've talked about this a lot of times. The more and more rules and laws that you put in, the less and less the spirit can be creative. The less and less are we giving opportunity for the spirit to work. It's, yes, for lack of a better word, magic. That's what it's about. It's about this creative energy that's inside of us. And sometimes we stifle it. So it was very easy for me sitting in that meeting to be looking at others. And, you know, I just needed a time to say, it's not about clearing out the temple. It's about clearing out myself. Take it for what you understand. Okay, let's continue with the show. Over the last couple days, His Holiness Karakin II, the Catholicos of all Armenians, was found in the Vatican. There he met with His Holiness Francis, the Pope or the Bishop of Rome. And along with that meeting, he had an opportunity also to meet with the Ecumenical Patriarch, His Holiness Bartholomew. And he's from Constantinople, or today Istanbul. And what's interesting is we had a picture, and I will put a link on today's show notes to a couple of the sites that reported about this, including the site at Holy Etchmiadzin, you know, and I invite you to look through, read about it, because it's fascinating. And I think it's important. It's something that I don't want to get into in detail over here, because I think it's at a different level. I think that as a Catholicos, you have certain responsibilities for not only just the individual, but for the entire community, the entire country, the entire church. And I think that that level of negotiation is very important. Like, you may not be on the field battling, but it's that diplomatic relation to be able to keep those lines flowing between you and the head of the Roman Catholic Church, for instance, okay? Keep yourself going along with the head of the Orthodox communion. So, by the way, if you, I know Francis, you know, you've heard of him, His Holiness Bartholomew, you may not have heard, and you should, actually. He's responsible for a large, large number of Christians, namely the Orthodox. He is the first among equals, head of the what we call the Eastern Orthodox branch of Christianity. And these are all apostolic chairs. And so there is this respect among them. And you can liken it to the time of Jesus, where he sent out the disciples to become apostles, to go out there and preach the good news. And you could imagine that after the resurrection, you know, Thaddeus said goodbye to the other 11. Peter said goodbye to the other 11. And he went his way to Rome. Thaddeus made his way to Armenia. And each of them went their own way. And here they are 2,000 years later. Their descendants, the ones who claimed the throne, namely His Holiness Catechin II, His Holiness Pope Francis, they're meeting. So it's like a meeting of brothers, two of the apostles returning and meeting each other. I mean, this is beautiful. It's beautiful. I did some more about this when His Holiness Francis came to Armenia, and there's an entire podcast about that. So I'm going to put a link on today's show notes so you could delve into it a little bit more if you'd like, okay? But for our sake right now, I just wanted you to think about these two coming together and the importance of keeping these lines of communication open, because when the Turks are at your doorstep, when they're all around you and they are trying to bring you down, you need to be able to exercise this kind of leverage, and on the international scale. So in that respect, I think that these kind of meetings are very important. I know, you read the title, you read what they're doing and the exercises. It's very nice. It's a group of people trying to get together and encourage brotherhood among nations, among Christian neighbors. And it's very, very important to do it at this level. On the smaller level, you know that, you know, there's people who are going to be fighting. People are going to fight, and if they could get their act together on the top, you're hoping that it'll trickle down to the guys on the front line. I mean, it always bothers me that we in the Armenian church are neighbors with Georgians, for instance, who are Christian, who have an alphabet that was created by this same monk who created ours, and who have a same faith, a common faith. And yet when you go through Georgia, there's this animosity. It's not defined, but you feel it. You definitely feel it. Anyway, I'm going to put some pictures, I'm going to put some links, I'm going to let you do the deciphering of all of this today, of what happened at this meeting and what the collaboration is. It's not in the scope of today's podcast. I just wanted to mention this because it comes down to what is in the scope of this podcast, namely the issue of faith. And I came across this most beautiful, beautiful story that I want to share with you today. And I want to share it because it's exactly along the lines of what I was saying earlier today. If Jesus came right now, he needed to talk to us. He would use terms, metaphors, parables that would make sense to us. Jesus said, I am the true vine, you are the branches. If you're connected to the vine, you will bear good fruit. Now, most people get their fruit from a supermarket. They get it from the local grocer. You really don't think about the idea of branches and about clusters of grapes, how they are propagated, how they sit on the branches. You really don't think about that because you're not dealing with it on a day in and day out. The farmer who produces that grape will understand that. And trust me, when Jesus talked, he was talking to people who understood that metaphor. You're in a world today where the branches are electronic. You're living in a world where we have Ethernet cables that are plugging in to things called Wi-Fi, and it is just like transmitting that energy throughout the space. And we're understanding this. We're understanding that I've got like a file on my computer, but I also want to put it someplace on the cloud. And I go, whoa, that's exciting. What is the cloud? What is the space and all this? Okay. And Jesus would talk to us in terms that we would understand. And that's what I found this week. I found this most beautiful story that I want to share with you. I'm very thankful for my Bible study group because I shared it with them, and within a few minutes they found the author of it. I know, it was a little bit too fast, though, because it makes you think, like, okay, are you listening to the Bible study? Because they were tapping away at their keyboards pretty quickly, and they came up with a guy named Dr. Wayne Dyer. Subsequently, I've looked it up, and it says the original story was told by Henry Nguyen, and it appears all of these are mini versions adapted from the writing of Pablo Molinero. And I wanted to bring out the guy's name for sure because I think it is really exceptional. And I think credit should be given where credit is due, especially in this case. It is the story of two babies in their mother's womb. The first baby asks the other, "Do you believe in life after delivery?" The second baby replied, "Why, of course. There has to be something after delivery. Maybe we are here to prepare ourselves for what we will be later." "Nonsense," said the first. "There is no life after delivery. What would that life be?" "I don't know, but there will be more light than here. Maybe we will walk with our legs and eat with our mouths." The doubting baby laughed. "That is absurd. Walking is impossible. And eat with our mouths? Ridiculous. The umbilical cord supplies nutrition. Life after delivery is to be excluded. The umbilical cord is too short." The second baby held his ground. "I think there is something, and maybe it's different than it is here." But the first baby replied, "No one has ever come back from there. Delivery is the end of life. And in the after delivery, it is nothing but darkness, anxiety, and it takes us nowhere." "Well, I don't know," said the twin. "But certainly we will see Mother, and she will take care of us." "Mother?" the first baby guffled. "You believe in Mother? Where is she now?" The second baby calmly and patiently tried to explain. "She's all around us. It is in her that we live. Without her, there would be no world." "Ha! I don't see her, so it's only logical that she doesn't exist." To which the other replied, "Sometimes when you're in silence, you can hear her. You can perceive her. I believe there is a reality after delivery, and we are here to prepare ourselves for that reality when it comes." I don't know. I just thought this was so beautiful. It's the metaphor. It gets you to think. It gets you to think, like, we think it's impossible. We don't see people coming out of graves. We take them into the cemetery and they don't come out. We don't know that there's another life after this. There's no proof. But isn't it the same of two children inside of a mother's womb having this kind of conversation? Like, oh, come on, there's nothing beyond birth. There's nothing. I mean, the umbilical cord gives us food. You mean we're going to use our mouth? Impossible. Impossible. Don't say impossible. And it's that kind of faith of the second child that we need to have when we're talking about life, death, and God. It's an explanation of God that I think was so beautifully said, because it's in terms that you and I can understand. I'm going to put a link on today's show notes. I do mention this, that it's very important that when we use things like this, that we do give credit. I took some extra liberty in finding these places, because I know that a lot of times I get hurt because we come up with very novel ideas here on The Next Step, and we share it with people. Not that I want applause or anything, but we want people to understand that there is a process by which these things come about. It's not like we woke up, and I go to pains to share that process with you, to share that it's not just out of thin air that we bring these ideas together. It's the idea of living, of sharing, and being coupled with people. And we need to share that with people to say that, yes, there is a process in which I'm involved, and it's called The Next Step. I want to take that next step. So that was the story that I wanted to share with you today. It falls in with everything we talked about, connects some dots, but also very important for us to be thinking about relevancy, about talking about things, about sharing ideas that go beyond the traditional, to be able to say we are flexible, that not everything is black and white. There are some gray areas, and those gray areas are mostly what life is made up of. Don't forget that. Most of life is in that gray region. It's in the colors. Yes, there are definite blacks and whites in life. But there are a lot of grays that have to be experienced, processed, understood, shared, have compassion, understanding, and those all play into it. I've got one more story that goes beyond understanding, and I need to share that with you. I'll do that in just a moment, because Susie's jumping in to tell us what's going on next, okay? I'll be back in a moment.
Before getting back to The Next Step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The Next Step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to The Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. I have to share this story with you, and since we're talking about In His Shoes. You know that In His Shoes is the concept, the philosophy under which we live. We have an organization. It's called In His Shoes, and it challenges us to walk in the shoes of others. Several years ago, by a court order, the singer Chris Brown was ordered to do community service with us, and he was instructed, I forgot how many hours there were, to do, and he did, and we signed off on him, and during that time, we were able to meet with him, we prayed together, we actually spent time together, not myself only, but we had a team of people, and they came under the banner of In His Shoes to help out, to make it a productive time for a man who was really troubled. I honestly don't know how he's doing now. I hope he's doing well, but I know at the time he was in a lot of trouble. I'd say this is about almost a 10-year-old story. About a week ago, I start doing some research on something else, and I come across an article. And I'm like shocked. I read the headline, and my heart sinks. It drops. What? The headline on this article is Chris Brown accused of lying about community service says a day in his shoes is hell. What? Oh man, you know, like, accused of lying about community. I was there. I signed off on him. I know how many hours he did. I know he did all those hours. I mean, I was there. I signed off on it. What are they accusing? Second of all, in his shoes was a day of hell. I mean, we had such a great time. We spent time. We photographed together. We spoke. We shared ideas together. He did his community service. We watched. I mean, it was a very, very special time. And now he's saying it was hell. So I looked at this article and I anxiously read through it. And yes, it was about the same time, but it wasn't referring to our organization. The final line in this story says, a day, it's a quote by Chris Brown. It says, a day in my shoes is a day in hell, believe it or not. So the title was talking not about the organization, but about the actual shoes of Chris Brown. And that was one of those funny little twists for me, which kind of like woke me up, woke me up. It also made me realize how important In His Shoes is, because it is really about empathy, about compassion, about sharing the love of Christ in our hearts with others. It's about feeling the pain of others, walking in their shoes. We just, our dear friends went off to the Central African Republic, KDJ and Gabriel. You know that how much we've been close to them with their work doing in Armenia. We just spent some time with them. I shared with you a book by Ezra. These are all people that have compassion, that are understanding the pain of others. And the entire philosophy of In His Shoes is about that. It's about feeling the pain and acting in ways that can alleviate that pain and that pressure in those shoes. That being said, thank you very much for all of you who listen and support this podcast. Let's see, in the coming weeks, we've got a few things coming up. I'm going to steer you to a really great opportunity. If you can, put it on your calendar, November 13 and 14. There's going to be a festival out in the Coachella Valley, and we're thinking about going there with a group, and we're thinking about being available to talk about the Armenian spirit, about Armodoxy. That's going to be November 13, 14 in Coachella Valley. Happens to be at the St. Garabed Armenian Church. And I will do a plug for them in that respect. Please do check it out. I'll put a link on today's show notes. And it has all the information. And I'm giving you a little bit of a warning. So hopefully you can make it out there. In popular terms, this is Palm Springs, okay? Doesn't get any popular than that. That about does it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of our wonderful producer, Susie, and myself, Father Voskin, I look forward to taking the next step with you again next week.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off, but I'm top limits.